U2. The name of a Cold War era spy plane. It's a beautiful day. It's also something of an embrace, a call for togetherness. U2. Such is the built-in ambiguity of the rock sensation U2 and its frontman Bono.
Having, you know, Bob Dylan or John Lennon or Bob Marley later, you know, whispering words of dissent and encouragement into my ear, a simple idea that the world can be changed and that you must change too.
Bono's mystique comes from his own carefully cultivated ambiguity. Is he the sunglassed sex symbol in black leather? Or the messiah of pop do-gooders in black Africa?
Chris Anderson asked me if I could put the last 25 years of anti-poverty campaigning into 10 minutes for Ted. I said, Chris, that would take a miracle. He said, Bono, wouldn't that be a good use of your messianic complex?
Certainly Bono is having the time of his life holding on to the global spotlight as an aging rock and roll activist, philanthropist, and pal of former Presidents Bush and Clinton. Over in Dublin, Ireland, though, where Bono is a local boy and a much less revered figure, people say with perhaps a bit of jealousy that Bono is better known as a tax dodger and an egomaniac who delivers more coolness to billionaires than he delivers resources to the poor. Dublin-based journalist Harry Brown explores this critical premise in his new book about Bono titled The Frontman. Brown says Bono's belief in himself may far exceed what he has managed to accomplish on the ground in Africa.
There's never really been a celebrity at his level, who on the one hand is a very successful popular culture figure, and on the other hand is regularly mentioned as a nominee for the Nobel Peace Prize. So he is bringing this, if you like, this marketing of philanthropy onto a new level. And in some of the particular ways that he operates in terms of making the operations of the rich world in the poor world appear beneficial, they're really quite, the consequences are quite terrible. So, for instance, the question of tax avoidance, which everyone has been talking about, Bono doesn't only practice tax avoidance, as most people know, in relation to his investments in Ireland. He actually preaches it, so that when controversy came out about U2's tax affairs, he said, hey, tax avoidance essentially is how Ireland got to its prosperity. Everyone knows there are clever people in the government and in the revenue who created a financial architecture that prospered the entire nation. Now, by the time he said that in 2009, that very same financial architecture, it was clear, had beggared not only the entire nation of Ireland, but it had actually beggared the world. The financial architecture of Ireland, in other words, has been at the center of the financial crisis over the last 5 years, and it costs Africa tens of billions of dollars every year. And that's the really important thing. On the one hand, you have Bono praising the American government and praising companies who throw some money at Africa, and of course some of it does good. But on the other hand, encouraging policies in terms of trade policies, in terms of encouragement of foreign-owned investment in Africa, the encouragement of genetically modified crops, and the encouragement of tax avoidance that actually cost African governments in the billions.
When Bono shows up at Davos, is there a difference between someone like him and someone like Warren Buffett or some of the corporate interests that are represented at the World Economic Forum?
Well, Bono, in some respects, is their employee, even though he's very wealthy himself. Warren Buffett and Bill Gates pay for Bono's campaign organization, One. And Bono works very hard to continue to be the kind of symbol of, if you like, the soft nature of the powerful. And so when he's at Davos, he's there almost like a mascot rather than like a peer, I think.
Does Bono know he's a frontman in your view, or does he believe he's playing the lead singer for this philanthropic rock show that he's been putting on for the last couple decades?
I think that if he didn't believe that at some level, it would be very hard for him to continue to do it. I mean, he often jokes himself about the scale of his ego and what it takes to be the front man in a rock band, what it takes to want those spotlights, those sounds, those thousands of people all converging on the person of yourself. And I'm sure that an element of that same buzz is what comes down to him when he's at Davos, when he's on television, and indeed even when he's traveling in the developing world.
As an author, journalist, and economic critic, who do you think Bono helps to get off the hook in terms of international criticism? What corporations, what institutions, what public figures associating with Bono, what benefit do they get?
Well, that's a great question, and I think there's been a series of them. I'm not sure that Bono is perhaps delivering quite as much as he would have done 10 years ago. So, for instance, when at the time leading up to the Iraq War, when the Bush administration essentially turned to Bono to work on AIDS funding for Africa and got a lot of really good publicity out of the association with Bono, Bono and Bush walking together in the Rose Garden, you had a situation where in the State of Union address in 2003, President Bush said that he was going to deliver money for AIDS in Africa, and in the next paragraph he said that he was going to be attacking Iraq. So there was a real direct link between what Bono was encouraging Bush to do in Africa and to portray that as a humanitarian act, and to portray in turn the invasion of Iraq as a similarly humanitarian act. But there have been others. I mean, at the moment you've got Monsanto in Africa, and Bono is part of a coalition that's encouraging foreign-owned agriculture and chemical agriculture in Africa. You've got the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which, of course, most people regard as largely benign. But Bono essentially portrays Bill Gates as the personification of enlightenment, just as he portrays, say, Facebook as the vanguard of the global revolution. And he's got this obsession with sort of data and the idea that data are the key to unlocking the problems of poverty. It's actually a kind of a techno-utopianism, which is in itself, I think, deeply flawed. And indeed, many of the statistics that Bono brings forward in order to put forward his case that he and others like him are saving Africa, I think, are also deeply flawed. And I've written about that as well.
Can you listen to U2 music without thinking about these economic critiques anymore, Harry Brown?
Oh, God, yes, I can. Yeah, and I like quite a lot of U2 music. I was never a huge fan, but I also have never been a hater, as it were. And I think that U2 have done some beautiful songs. I can certainly listen to the likes of One or Bullet the Blue Sky and not think, what a shame about this guy. I think you can separate the man and the art, and that's what I've tried to do here.
Harry Brown, journalist and author of The Frontman, Bono, In the Name of Power. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.